For this morning's workshop is Life is Not a Dress Rehearsal, Using the Steps Instead of the Food. And so there are two speakers here this morning, and we will each speak for 20 minutes, and then there'll be time for open sharing. My name is Judy. I'm a compulsive overeater and a food addict, and I'm from Calgary, Canada. Thank you to the Canadians. So I think this topic really appealed to me when I first heard about it, and I think for me, I felt to put it into context, I have to tell you a little bit about my story and where I've come from. So I've been in OA about 18 years. I didn't keep track of when I came. And when I arrived in OA, I was completely demoralized, had no hope. I was totally disconnected from myself, disconnected from God, and disconnected from others. And I had a long, long career of dieting before I got to OA. And I started my first diet when I was 15, and by the time I was 30, I weighed twice what I did when I started, and it wasn't from lack of trying. So I found that for me, my weight really ruled my life. My top weight was 300 pounds, and I was there a few times. And because I was so large, I found a lot of things difficult. And I was totally obsessed with my weight. It very much ran my life. It determined what I did, what I felt I was capable of doing. It determined who I saw. You know, if people were coming to town and wanted to look me up, then I would think about, well, what did I weigh last time I saw them? And if I was heavier, I would lie and say I was busy. And if I was lighter, well, then come on over. And it was quite a crazy way to live. I was emotionally absolutely exhausted, and like I say, I didn't have any hope at all. Spiritually, I didn't know what I was missing there. I thought food was my higher power. I knew it wasn't my best friend, but it was maybe my only one. And I had gone to Sunday school as a kid, and that was the only God that I knew. And I learned in program that really the attributes of that God were really my dad, you know, a very controlling entity, very punitive, very demanding, authoritative. And when I got to OA, what I heard was other people talk about their higher power, and I wanted that higher power. And I heard in program that I could get that higher power, that I could write my own description of a higher power, and I could have a different God, and that's what I chose to do, and have a very different God in my life today. So, like I said, when I arrived in OA, I was on all three levels in very bad shape. And the first, I think, 9 years in program, I struggled a lot with my physical abstinence. I was abstinent for part of the time. I very quickly figured out that sugar was a problem for me, and I abstained from that when I was abstinent. And, you know, I tried the 301, all of those things, but I found it difficult to string together a lot of days or a lot of months. And that was just my personal struggle. Emotionally, I grew a lot in the program the first 5 years. Even though I was sitting in the back of the room, I never said anything to anybody. I don't remember for how long, a year or two anyway. And but I got such amazing strength from listening to other people share and tell their stories. And during the first 5 years that I was in OA, three really, really close people in my life died. My girlfriend passed away from cancer, and then my boss, who was my mentor and the dad I always wanted, he passed away from cancer, and then my own father died a year after that. And I found that just by sitting in the rooms, I got incredible strength and capability to be present for those people. And I remember in particular, there was one woman who talked about her uncle who was dying. And I never said anything about all the people I knew that were dying, but she helped me. And I don't even know her name, and she, you know, she's not in program anymore. So what I noticed about my weight is that it started to stabilize. I didn't have those dramatic gains and losses, you know, before I would, you know, lose 70, gain 80, lose 50, gain 80, whatever. But I noticed that it started to stabilize, and, you know, my weight gains and losses were more in the 20 or 30 pound range, which for me was an absolute miracle. And I think for me, my God speaks to me through other people. And I'm a great isolator. I like to say that since I came into program, I'm a much more sophisticated isolator. But I still know all the tricks. And that's me being disconnected from God. I know that. And so I like the God I have today because he has the most amazing ability to just put the right person in my life at the right time, whether it's to show me one of my character defects in Technicolor or whether it's to get a message through to me. And I've found that in program, my job then is really to be abstinent and to be present. And then I can hear those messages. Otherwise, I'm in big trouble. So in spite of not being what I call really abstinent for the first 9 years in program, I feel that I had tremendous recovery on the other two levels. And I never once quit OA. I didn't, you know, I came to meetings all the time, and that saved my life on so many levels. And things just gradually began to shift for me. And people are always asking me what was the turning point for me, and I don't honestly know, but, you know, I've looked back on it, and I think part of it was I was winding down a long career. I had a very successful career. I thought there was really only one thing wrong with my life, and that was my weight, if I could just get that under control. And anyways, winding down this long career and very emotional about it because I'd been there for 30 years, and I didn't know how I was going to manage without it. And it was, I was working for the federal government. And because of my position, they sent me on a week long pre-retirement course to Ottawa. And I don't remember a thing about the week except for this one speaker. And I think it was a psychologist or a doctor, I don't know. But I remember one thing he said. And he said, "Don't kid yourself when you retire. You're not going to take up ballroom dancing. All you're going to do is more of what you're already doing. If you really wanted to ballroom dance, you would already be doing it." And I thought, I'm going to eat myself into oblivion. That's what I'm going to do in my retirement, because that's what I'm doing today. I'm eating. And I got scared. And so I started looking around the program and saying, what am I not doing right? You know, talk to my higher power. Help me out, because I'm clearly not on the right path. So I looked around and talked to a lot of people, changed the way I did everything, got a different sponsor, and really got serious about having a food plan in my life. And that's what changed for me. And I lost all my weight. I'm very grateful for that. I just heard someone in the last session say that she doesn't like to talk about losing weight because she always found it again. And I thought, gee, that's really good. Okay, so I released all the weight, or my higher power took it, which was really even better. And it's just been an incredible journey for me. And what I found, you know, I've been abstinent for 10 years now, and I'm just so grateful for that. And I've had so many miracles in this program, all from my higher power. It's just the most amazing thing. I couldn't have scripted the life I have today. It wasn't in my vision. And for today, I know it doesn't have to be. So this session, you know, life is not a dress rehearsal. Well, I lived my whole life thinking it was. You know, I just, like I say, I was totally disconnected. I felt like I was in some kind of a play. I was always acting. I was an expert at what I call image management, always trying to manage your image of me. And so I would, you know, I'd say things I didn't even believe just to try to get you to maybe think I was a certain way. I didn't even know I was doing that, though, because in program, that's where I learned that. In program, that's where I learned to evaluate my motives and question them. It's like, what are you doing? You know, who is this really for? Who are you trying to impress, you know? And it was so important to me to get recognition or for somebody to pat me on the back. And my sponsor, when I'm whining to her today, she always says, "You want to feel special, don't you, Judy?" And I say, "Yes, I really do." And then she says to me, "You're doomed." And that's exactly right. You know, so that's one of my biggest character defects. And so far, God hasn't quite, you know, removed that one. But so I don't feel like I did live my life as though it was a dress rehearsal, because I felt like I thought I was participating. And I think I looked like I was participating. But really, I was on the edge, you know, because I let my weight decide. Well, maybe I could take this, you know, night course at the university. Well, what kind of desks are they going to have there? You know, I might not fit in that. And, you know, maybe I could take a trip. Oh, I don't know. I don't want to wear one of those seatbelt things. You know, like, just my weight was my excuse for everything. Okay, and it also gave me physical distance, which I apparently really wanted. and it worked, it worked on some bizarre level. And so now today I feel like I'm playing catch up. I feel like there were maybe 30 years of my life that I wasn't present for. So I went from being a teenager to being 50 overnight, you know. And then I've heard people say in the program, and I like this, you know, that for those of us who have addictions, I've heard that we remain emotionally the age we were when we started practicing our addiction. So that makes me 8 or 9 emotionally, and people are looking at me and thinking they're interacting with an adult, you know, and I'm not. You know, but I'm learning to be, and I'm learning that in program. And I'm thinking, what a huge gift that I get to be a teenager again, and I get to learn all those things that people would assume I learned earlier, you know. So today, if I'm out riding my bike or something, people don't know I haven't been on a bike since I was a teenager. They assume I've been keeping up with the things, you know. And so it's just a weird place to be, and I don't hear it talked about a lot in OA. I don't hear maintenance talked about a lot, and so it's just different. And I, you know, and then using the steps instead of the food. Well, after you've been in program for the length of time that I have been, I don't feel like I so much do the steps or work the steps. I live the steps. They just become part of my life, sort of woven into the fabric of who I am. So I don't consciously think, well, what step am I on, you know, unless I'm working with one of my sponsees or something. But it's just a way of living, and that's what it tells us in the literature. You know, there is a proven workable method by which we can arrest our illness. And I love it that I have an illness. That explained a lot of things to me. I just thought I was a weak-willed, I don't know what. Like, I thought everybody couldn't walk past a bakery. Anyway, so, and I have to say, you know, I just, speaking of that, just came back from my first trip to Europe and stayed with some people who owned a bakery, you know. So I feel like I've come full circle, because, of course, when I was in grade 11 and I worked part-time in a bakery, they lost a lot of money on me, I'm sure. And the owner was just so excited. He bought us these cute little uniforms, you know. And I wore mine for about 2 weeks until I couldn't fit into it anymore because of all the stuff that he was selling. So anyway, so I have an issue about uniforms, so don't get me started. But for me, I need the steps. Like, I really need them. And I need the tools, and I need the slogans, and I need you guys. And I am just so powerless, especially over my husband and my mother. Those are the two that I spent a lot of time praying about, you know. And my husband married me in the depths of my disease. He doesn't know who he's living with now. You know, it's just, I'm sure there's a little of me left there, but it's a different relationship. We've had to relearn a lot of things, and with the help of you guys, I have the courage to do that. I'm really excited. We're going next weekend to a marriage course recommended by my sponsor, who took it with her husband, and I would have never done that before. I wouldn't have admitted that I needed to do that. So I'm just really excited about that, and like, we are so ready, you know. So for me today, I just want to be present. I want to live in reality. And I can't do that unless I turn my life over every day to my higher power and every minute of every day, because I am so not in charge. And I see evidence of that over and over and over again. And I see it through you guys. I see it in my own life. And I feel so privileged to witness so many people's lives changing, and I feel privileged to witness my own life changing, and to have the reassurance that I am not alone. I have God with me every step of the way, and it's just a miracle. And I have you guys, and I'm not really good at talking about my problems. I don't want you guys to think I have any problems, you know. So I'm learning that in program. I'm learning that it's okay. It's okay. And I just get so much strength from all of you, and I appreciate it so much. So I guess for me, a big thing too, because of my very large weight issue, I'm very committed to the food plan that I follow. And to me, it doesn't matter what kind of food plan anybody's on, but I really believe that everybody needs a food plan, because I don't understand, and I didn't see that before, but for me today, if I don't have a food plan, then I don't know how I know when I'm abstinent. And to me, it's my food plan, I'm very attached to it. It has saved my life, because for me, I eat 3 times a day. That's taken away about 1,000 decisions a day for me. You know, if somebody says at 2 o'clock, you want an ice cream, I don't have to say, well, no, I can't eat that. You know, I just said, gee, I had lunch, thanks. You know, or it's not dinner time yet. It's so simple if I let it be simple. But before program, you know, I can complicate the rubber band. I'm sure you've heard that before. And I like to make things complicated. And you know, I like Dr. Bob's story in the big book when he talks about losing the privilege. He's lost the privilege of drinking like a normal person. I've lost the privilege of eating like a normal person. And I don't care. I honestly don't care. That's fine with me. It's like, excuse me, like Lori said last night, you know, I've eaten enough of those things to last me a lifetime. Sometimes, though, when I'm in the grocery line and I see they've come out with a new product, you know, like, especially if it's one of my old binge foods, but now they have a different flavor or something, kind of gets me going. But anyway, today I know that abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. If I'm not abstinent, then I'm not talking to my higher power, and I'm not hearing my higher power. And that's the biggest thing for me, is to be hearing my higher power, because I need to do that. And I know if I have a problem and I eat over it, I have 2 problems. And I know it's important for me to know that acceptance is the answer to all my problems today, because if I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, it's because I'm not accepting something. And really, everything is exactly as it's supposed to be. I don't have to understand it. And I don't have to know the big picture. All I have to know is today, this minute. And also to come from a place of gratitude. Wow, I wish I had time to tell you this incredible thing that just happened, you know, in my life in the last couple of months. It's just so amazing. But if I ever had any doubts, which I didn't, but wow, it was quite the thing that unfolded for my husband and I. Just a really neat experience. And And so that was all part of our trip to Europe and the reason that we went there. So I'm just so grateful for the privilege to be here and the privilege to be part of this amazing fellowship and the honor of knowing you guys and really knowing that I belong. I didn't know there were all these other crazy people in the world. And I think it's really cool that we don't know each other, but we know each other. And I'm so grateful for that. So thank you for letting me share this morning.
Over to you. Okay, thanks. I'm John. I'm a compulsive eater. Thank Judith for asking me to do this. I'll just qualify. I've been in program for 28 years. I have a little over 14 and a half years of abstinence. I'm maintaining about 105 pound weight loss for almost all that time. Thanks to my higher power and through OA. And, you know, I sat there listening to Judy going, yeah, what she said. Because she and I have some very, very similar stories, you know. This whole idea of life not being a dress rehearsal. I remember when I came in the first time into OA, I had been a fat kid my entire life. I was 26 at the time. I'd been heavy. I went through one very short time of being a normal weight when I changed over to alcohol, and I just sort of changed my sugar delivery to liquid form, and that didn't last very long. And when I came in, I lost all my weight. Like I would kill for the metabolism I had when I came in. Then I don't have it anymore, unfortunately. But I lost my weight very quickly. I had a number in mind of what I wanted for a quote goal weight, you know. And when I used to talk about goal weight, it would be like, you know, you'd hear angels singing and the rainbow would goal weight, you know. And I got to that goal. I got to that number very quickly, and nothing changed. And I went, well, then I guess that's not the right number, you know. And I lost my. And it was the one time in my life. I always talk. I'm an overeater. I've been a bulimic. I've been an exercise bulimic. And for one brief time in my life, I was anorexic because I kept chasing a magic number. And the magic number was not the number numerically. It was the number at which I would like myself. I would feel confident in myself and being able to go talk to the opposite sex and be able to feel okay about my body. And when I didn't, that didn't change, I said, well, it must be another 5 pounds. And then it must be another 5 pounds. And finally, I had people come up going, dude, eat something, you know, because the reality was, if I couldn't learn to start liking myself today, it was never going to get there. You know, there's a great line, and I'm going to butcher it, but the paragraph after the acceptance paragraph in the big book, it talks about, you know, we're all God's children. We all have a right to be here. There's a bit of good in the worst of us, a bit of bad in the best of us. When I criticize you or me, I criticize God's handiwork. And I used to always hear that and go, yeah, you see, I got to not criticize you because I'm criticizing God's handiwork. But for many years, I missed the me. When I criticize me, I'm criticizing God's handiwork. And I couldn't get the idea that, you know what, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be and it's okay and I need to work on liking myself and loving myself where I am, or there's never going to be a number on the scale that's going to ever allow that to happen. And I know for me, that was a big part of getting it. And the other thing was, obviously I don't have time to tell my whole story, but that gap there between what time I came in and how long I've been abstinent is a whole story. And part of it was, I could never grasp the idea of powerlessness with my food. I'm in another program, no trouble. Got that one down. You know what to do, you know what not to do, and if you do it, you're not, you know. But part of the problem is I told myself intellectually on the upper layer, I get it, I'm powerless. I would go to meetings, I'm powerless, I'm powerless, I'm powerless. I'd tell you, hey, I'm powerless. And then I'd go eat. And then I'd come back, I'm powerless. No, really, I'm powerless. And then I'd eat. And then I'd come back, and I'm powerless. No, and eat. You know, it took me years to get what the problem was, you know. I get today that I'm powerless over a bullet in a gun. You know how I know? Because I've never taken a gun and put it to my head, and as I'm pulling the trigger, say, I'll start again on Monday. You know, I get that's not going to work. And the problem was, you know, I heard a guy in another program say once, he goes out a lot because he comes back so well. And that was the problem. I kept telling myself I was powerless, but I had empirical proof otherwise, because I had broken my abstinence, gone out, come back, and regained my abstinence over and over and over. And if you're a thinking, logical person, even though you're saying you're powerless, you have the proof there. Look, I know if I come back, it may take a while. I may have to get a new sponsor. I may have to go to meetings around the clock. I may have to start calling. I may have to write. But I'll eventually, you know, grind that train to a halt. But the trouble is, as long as I believed that, I was setting up the next one and the next one and the next one. And this took years, and I mean literally years, for me to get that I had to change my concept of a definition of powerlessness, at least when it came to the food, because it wasn't that I wasn't powerful in the small picture, in the little micro picture. I can be powerful. But the trouble is I needed to pull back. You know, like that scene in Gone with the Wind where they're in a tight shot and they just keep pulling back and back. Well, it's the same thing. All of a sudden, I needed to pull back and look at those 15, 18 years that I had been slipping and sliding with periods of abstinence and say, well, you know, was I abstinent or was I on one long slip with brief periods of food control? And that's what I had to come to understand that I had been doing. And it was so hard. And when I first came in, you used to always hear, I don't eat no matter what. You know, it used to be a very, in fact, I think you had to actually slap the table when you did it. It was the rule. But I heard somebody have a great line once, not that long ago, that her sponsor said. She said, if you're a compulsive overeater and you've made food an option, it's always going to be the only option. It's always going to be the path of least resistance. And I thought about, you know, it's true. If I have a choice of having to go through some emotional pain, and trust me, I am an emotional painophobe. I want to do anything. I want to find an escape. I'll drink. I'll drug. I'll eat. I'll get on the internet. I'll find something because I don't want to deal with bad feelings. And even good feelings can sometimes be hard for me because I grew up in a household where we didn't have feelings. It's a no-brainer if I have a choice of having to go through that or going to eat something that, A, may taste good and I like, but also at least at one point in my life did something. And all of a sudden, you know, the reality was I couldn't see. First of all, it had stopped doing something for me a long time ago, but it would have been a no-brainer. And so what I realized is I had to change my definition of powerlessness for me to say food cannot be an option anymore. It just can't be an option, or it'll always be the only option. And I needed to figure out what that meant. Now, that takes a lot, too, but just the whole idea. You know, when it talks in the topic here about using the steps instead of the food, you know, I was like a rat in a maze going down the wrong thing on a maze and getting to the end and banging my head into the wall because that's as far as I could go. And then I would pull all the way out and then go down the same one again. And I kept doing that over and over and wondering why things weren't changing. Why wasn't I changing, you know? And I love that program phrase, nothing changes if nothing changes. It was really true. I needed to explore, well, gee, let me see what happens if I go through this emotional pain and don't eat, you know? And because that's where, to me, the growth started to happen. The only way I grew with the food was physically, you know? And what I needed to do is to have something there, you know. Now, this is all tied back into lots of more of my story of finding some kind of a power greater than myself. Or this is a really hard world for me, you know. I come from a childhood where I needed control. I needed control. There was no doubt about it. And so I spent my life grasping with fingernails for any a bit of control I could get, you know, and the reality was it wasn't control, it was the illusion of control, you know. The longer I'm around, the more I get weary, you know, we're all just little ants on this globe here walking around and we have very little control, you know. I got into a line of work where I was, you know, I didn't have a regular paycheck, and then I, after that sort of ended and I went into other field, I still work for myself, and I had people say to me, oh, I could never do that. You have a lot of faith, because I need the security of being, you know, getting a paycheck every day and going into a building, and, you know, and I said, yeah, you know, like working for like one of the top firms in the country, you know, like maybe the number three firm, it was called Enron, you know, and those people, oh, I'm going to work for a firm. And they walked one day and the door was locked, you know, they walked up and the door was locked. And then you start to realize we don't, it's all illusions of control. And I needed to be able to find an ability to have a higher power. You know, and for me, I heard Laurie say it last night. I don't have the old white guy on the top of the Sistine Chapel. You know, I have a belief everything's the way it's exactly supposed to be. And the whole concept of acceptance, you know. An old sponsor used to keep drilling into me, acceptance doesn't mean you like it. You just accept it. And that was so hard for me, you know, because the other thing I always like to say about this disease and this program is it's hard. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to make it a downer, but in my other programs, if there's something good about some of these other programs that really slam you face down into the pavement, like drinking and drugs, is you have a moment of really a clarity of going, wow, I'm a mess. I need to do something. And the trouble with this disease is it's so slow. And if you have a good brain, you can constantly keep moving those goalposts. You can constantly keep looking in the mirror from here up. You can constantly keep accepting what was previously unacceptable. You know, I was telling Laurie after the meeting last night, over my other programs, I get kidded sometimes about being in OA, okay? And I always tell those people, I've buried two sponsees in OA. I haven't buried any in AA. And this is a life and death disease for me. And, you know, one of the guys I buried, you know, he was 600 pounds. And he died in a fire. You know, he died because he couldn't get out. And when I had all these thoughts of, well, if my weight gets, I'll have a heart attack, I'll have a stroke or whatever, I never thought of that one. And the thing about Jim was, I remember saying to him one day, if I told you in college you were going to be 600 pounds, you'd tell me I was nuts. You know, you'd say, oh, I'll never get to be 600 pounds. And I said, but 200 to 225? Okay, 225 to 250? Well, I'm never going to get to 300. Okay, I'm at 300, but no more than 310. And that's what happens, you know? And the trouble with that kind of chronic pain is the body gets used to that, both physically and emotionally and situationally. Whereas that other pain slams you enough where, you know, something changes in you, you know? The trouble with this disease, it makes you uncomfortable enough to know you need to change, but often not uncomfortable enough to be willing to go to any lengths to do it. And that's what makes this, in my opinion, a harder disease sometimes. Because I tell people it's the analogy of the boiled frog. For those who know, scientists can take a live frog and bring it down toward boiling water. And it's a smart little animal. It knows it shouldn't be near boiling water and will thrash to try and move away. But you can take that same frog and put it in a pan of room temperature water and slowly turn up the heat on it. And you can boil it to death in there. It'll never jump out. And that is, to me, the perfect analogy of our disease. I was boiling myself to death, and I couldn't get it, you know. And the other thing was, I ended up with a smaller and smaller and smaller world, you know. I got a buddy named Harlan who does these workshops, and he says, I'm not afraid of dying. I'm afraid of ending up back where I was, living the life of the living dead, getting up, going to the refrigerator, calling a takeout, watching TV, and that's it, you know? And today, and I know the only way to get through that, to change that, is to get through these things. And it was hard. I mean, I kept going back into the food right before my last abstinence, and I couldn't understand it. And I ended up going to another program for a while. I had a very strict food plan. And I was on this sine wave cycle of I would think about going out, and then I'd go out, and I would be out, you know, eating in the food, and then I'd think, I got to get back, and then I'd get back, and then I would get my abstinence eventually, and then I'd be obsessed on losing the weight, because you can just flip that little obsession thing over to weight loss, and then I would flip that into the weight loss thing, and then just about the point where I got back to goal weight and everything got quiet again, I'd start that whole cycle. And that went on for a number of years for me. And when I really became committed to, I'm not going to pick up no matter what. I'm going to make this the most important thing. First of all, I went and got a therapist. I went and did a few other things. And what ended up coming out one day after being the food down for a certain amount of time is, I'm in a marriage I do not want to be in. And I am married to a woman who loves me. And I'm a caretaker, child of alcoholic personality, who would rather shove sharp sticks in his eyes than have to break that news to my wife. And so I'll just eat. Which is what I did. And this huge, you know, screen of the food, what was between me and what was really going on. But I couldn't see it because the screen was there. You know, I love that line. If you want to find out why you're eating, stop eating. You know, it's a real simple thing, but it's not easy. And And as it turned out, this it could have been the. We ended up breaking up. We ended up going our separate ways. She's married to a wonderful guy. We actually had a nice, amicable breakup. I like him. I meet him. I see him. They're actually both in program. She wasn't in program. I was a carrier. She wasn't in the program when I was there. I was in, but. And I, you know, found somebody I like that I needed to be, but I didn't want to have to deal with it. So I just kept making it about the food. And you know, getting onto this was all very step-oriented. Lots of writing, lots of what's my part in this, and that's the part of changing your method of dealing with life and getting into these steps. You know, the greatest line I got from one of my first sponsors, the only thing I understand about God, kid, you ain't it. You know, and it's not that I really believed I was psychotically God, but I took so much responsibility for things I didn't have to. And, you know, the longer I'm around, the more I get, if you take the big book and all the stuff we learn and you reduce it, to use a cooking term, for those of you who are cooks, to three sentences, it's the serenity prayer, you know, accepting the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I had an old sponsor who used to say, you see the skin right here, kid? Here's the difference right there. Skin in, stuff you can change. Skin out, stuff you can't change. You know, and it was really true. There's so very little I have any control over, but my reactions I have 100% control over. You know, I'm on the freeways in L.A. I need to just say they're exactly the way God wants them to be, or else I'm going to be a nut. Now, I can choose not to do that, but in the end, I'm the only one who suffers. You know, sometimes I have to take some of these program concepts that, and I can't be Gandhi, I'd love to be, but I've got to be selfish and say, this is my stomach acid that'll churn. It's my thing, and I'm not going to change all the people on the roads in Los Angeles, but I can change my reaction to it. And in the past, that kind of thing would make me go out and eat. And because I needed, part of this was, food was my pressure valve. And what I kept not understanding is I got to figure out how to change this pressure valve. No, I just got to figure out how to stop the pressure from building up. You know, and if you keep working the steps and you keep working on some kind of a faith that everything's happening, you can change that. And for me, turning the focus back on myself a lot, you know, in any kind of 90% of my stuff now is interpersonal relationships, you know, and I'll be in something, and this guy's a jerk, blah, 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 blah. And then I walk, okay, well, wait a minute, what's my part in it? And I hate that. It's my sponsor's favorite line, you know, what's your part in it? You know, what? Let's look at this. And I don't want to. I want it to be all him. He's a jerk, I'm a saint, okay? What part don't you understand? And and the reality is, it's not that way, you know? It's. And again, something Judy said, one of the greater revelations that came about the seventh step with the concept of humility, you know, I had an old sponsor used to say, humility isn't humiliation. It isn't being like Gandhi or anything like that. It's about having an objective view of your place in the world. You know, you're not at the top of the heap. You're not at the bottom of the heap. You know, one of the great lines that we say in L.A. is, I'm the piece of shit the world revolves around. You know, I'm either at the top or I'm at the bottom, you know. But now I'm just another bozo on the bus, and it's fine. It's absolutely fine. But then I can become teachable, because if I'm the same as you, I can learn. I was always very intelligent. You know, people say intelligent people learn from their mistakes, but people who have wisdom can learn from other people's mistakes. Now, you would come up to me and say, don't touch that stove. And I'd go, ow, you're right, it's hot. But I had to touch it, because I'm so special, I wouldn't get it. You know, now I can go, well, if that person did that, I need to be careful of that. And you know, that terminally unique thing that Judy was talking about. There's a website, and I won't give the name right now, but they do all these takeoffs on, you know, those motivational posters that companies have up that are just bogus, because, you know, pay me more money, I don't need a motivational poster. But they have a couple of really funny ones that are funny, but then you stop and go, ooh. And one says, you are special, like a snowflake. Like every other snowflake. And it's true. We are all special, like everybody else. And the other favorite one from that says, the only common denominator between you and all of your bad relationships is you. And it's funny, but then you go, ooh. And you realize that there's a lot of truth in that. And so for me today, changing, first of all, I had to get the food down. The food had to stop being an option, or I couldn't explore any other options. And then to be able to use the steps to change the way I deal with life, and to constantly be trying to remove my character defects and to keep looking at them. And, you know, in my mind, I was going to someday, God was going to remove them. That was going to be it. Done. Okay, now I'm a saint and I can go on and everything will be nice. I mean, that's really what I believed in my first few years in program. And the longer I'm around, I get, no, you know what? This is that patient improvement thing. You know, I give them away and all of a sudden I turn around, oh God, that one's back. I got to work on this again. I thought I was done with that. But, you know, one of my other favorite lines this guy Harlan says is, no matter how much I work this program, no matter how much I memorize the big book and I really integrate the steps into my life, I never rise above the level of human being. You know, I falter, I fail, no matter how much I want to not do stupid stuff and act like a jerk sometimes. Guess what? I do. And then I, as quickly as I can, try to make amends and go, I screwed up. You know, when I first came into program, I was desperate to never admit failure. And boy, what a relief that 10th step is. I screwed up. You talk about the weight that people release from their bodies, but, you know, how much do you lose off your shoulders when you keep working these programs? Because you just go, well, I'm a human. I hate that I screwed up, but it's okay. You know, like I said, when I criticize you or me, I'm criticizing God's handiwork. And today, that's part of the key for me is that I just keep working the steps. And on any given day, I do it better than others. I had this idea that if you would eventually get to the point, you know, no, it's, you know, the longer I'm around, I get it's just we're all just keep working at it. And you know, I'm one of the great things is I moved from Connecticut where, you know, if you had 2 or 3 years, you were an old timer, into L.A. and speak with 30, 40 years. And you realize they're human. They're human. They'll have a bad day, too. I mean, this is why I know that he's one of my favorite speakers. He does all over. He's done national conventions. And I heard him one day just really lose it on somebody. And I'm like, wow. And I go, wait a minute. Why would I think he's different? You know, he's a human being. And I'm sure he felt really bad about 5 minutes after he did it, just like I do when I do it. But that's what it's about, is we just keep doing that patient improvement and say, you know, I want to do better. And my higher power today chose to give me back that defect, or I ripped it away from, wrenched it to have it again because I felt I needed it. And the more I'm around, the more I just go, you know what? I don't need those defects. That's part of it, is I had to have the faith that I could let those go and try something different. Just like I had to have the faith that I could put the food down and deal with life without the food. But that requires some faith, and it requires some belief that there's going to be a better thing, you know. And like I said, it's a day at a time, and some days are easier than others, and some days are just really tough. But those days don't happen very much. But when I was in the food, those really tough days just kept coming on a regular basis because I kept dealing with being in the food, or I would constantly keep resetting, you know. You know, I was part of that, and I'll wrap up. I kept resetting. It was like pushing a car that, you know, anybody's ever had to try and get a car started and you push it. It's really hard when you start. And then after a while, you just got to maintain it a little. It was sort of the same thing with me and my abstinence. And I kept letting the car roll to a stop and then pushing it again. And then I let it roll to a stop and go, God, this abstinence is hard. Well, you know, if I get it going and it starts to become a little bit more second nature, it'll be a lot easier. Now, there may be times when I got to get up over a little bump and it's going to be hard. But if I let it roll to a stop, then I'm really screwed because, again, I've told myself I can start it up again. And that's the whole powerless thing. So anyway, I want to thank you for letting me share, and I guess we're going to open it to questions. Or, no, open chairs, I'm sorry. Thank
you. Thanks. Now is the time for open sharing, and the session is being recorded, so if you don't want your name used, then just make up one. And if you'd like to form a line, then there won't be a lot of dead space on the tape. Well, look, they're rushing up here. There's 5, there's 10. And you only get 2 minutes, so you better hurry. I'm sure you all have a lot to say. Here comes Marilyn Monroe now.
Good afternoon, Mr. President. My name's Karina, and I am a compulsive overeater and really super happy to be here. I am a delegate from Northern Lights Intergroup in Edmonton, Alberta, but I walk in the room, and I'm Karina M. when I come to the convention, and I like being her today, for today. As I'm sitting there, I was thinking about my sponsee who's away, and... who's not here with me. And we love going to the coffee shop and meeting and talking, and I like spending time with her and doing that process face-to-face. We do it face-to-face. And so as I was listening, I was writing down all the little things because I didn't bring a notebook. And I thought, you know what? She would really appreciate all these little notes. So I'm going to take her back the coffee cup, and so she can have part of the program too. As I'm sitting, I'm listening about, you know, this whole concept of being in a dress rehearsal for your life. And that really touches me because I want to be the director. I want to direct the whole situation. I have a hard time giving up control and giving up the results. And that's something I've really been working on. I have issues with stepping on the scale, not that you people know anything about this, but stepping on the scale like numerous times. And I actually was in the program 15 years ago. Thank you. I was in the program 15 years ago and lost a little bit of weight and decided that I had graduated and went back out for that length of time and gained 15 pounds by weighing myself continuously and doing all the other crazy behaviors. So I've come back to get re-educated, and I appreciate this time in school. And to me, it is like, you know, returning to kindergarten once again, because I feel so young and appreciative of all the teachers that I have in my life now. And so I just wanted to thank them. Now I can take that back and share it too. Thanks.
I'm Hadia, a food addict. I just want to thank you both, really. I've been in program since the early 70s, so it's a long time. And lately, just going to meetings, I keep hearing, oh, my higher power, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. And just the process that both of you went through has really touched me deeply, because I feel like we're not honest. You know, with the meetings, everything's wonderful, and it's not wonderful for me. And it's just the little stuff. I've been off of wheat flour and sugar for at least 15 years, but I will go back for my metabolic for just a little bit more and a little bit. And it's all those crazy behaviors, and it hasn't put any weight, but it's just crazy behaviors. And just hearing your processes has really done something for me today. It really has, and I just want to thank you. And I think we need to hear those kinds of things more often. Thank you.
Oh, I think we're supposed to start with that. How did it get that long? I guess that's it then. Do we have a closing thing? Close workshop on time with suggested closing. Serenity prayer, third step prayer, seventh step prayer, OA promises. What do you say the serenity prayer?